Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are back again for our 371th, I'm sure you didn't say it that way, Lizzie, 371st time. It's very, very good to be with you, Lizzie, and it's very, very good to be with all of you who are with us. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us. You are all over the world, spread out geographically, and we also know spread out in time. People listen to this at all kinds of times, maybe weeks or months or years into the time after we've recorded this. And you are so welcome to be with us. And before we dive in with a wonderful source, Lizzie, that you have found, as you do every time, just a couple of words about this. So if you are new to Turning Towards Life, and some of you are, and many of you have been here for a long time, this is born out of a commitment to the world that we call Third Space, and you can go and find out about us at wearethirdspace.org. And most I want to tell you now that if you want to come and join us in January on Zoom to experience a bit of our professional coaching program from the inside as a guest coaching client, please head over to wearethirdspace.org and have a look, head to events, and you'll be able to see an opportunity to join us there. It will be wonderful to meet you. But you can also read about what we're up to and what we're committed to there. And then you can find all of our sources and all of the recordings on podcast platforms all over the place, and also at we are no at turningtowards.life, where you can support us and read all the sources. And if you want to be in contact with us, hello, or Lizzie or Justin at turningtowards.life, we'd love to hear from you. And after all of that preamble, Lizzie, now over to you.
Thanks, Justin. Good morning. Hello, everyone, and what a joy to hear. I've heard a few this week, Justin, of new people joining us. So I just want to say a warm welcome to anyone who's joining us anew. This source is a source that is a communication between two people, one of whom I know, one of whom I don't know. So I follow Natalie Meddings on Instagram, who was the My yoga is my yoga teacher, was my yoga teacher through both of my pregnancies, and was there for my daughter being born about 5 years ago now. And I know her in the wider world too. And this is a message from somebody called Molly, who I don't know, to Natalie. And clearly they have some relationship and conversation. And this was a notice, a little note that Molly sent to Natalie, and then Natalie posted it on her Instagram feed. And when I read it, I took a big deep breath and thought about us, Justin, and how there are themes in here that I feel I want to bring to our conversation. So I'm going to read, and then you can read, Justin, and then we'll see how this unfolds. So this is from Molly to Natalie. Hello, Natalie. I cannot tell you how much more content I am now that I've ditched social media and trying to be perfect. I have a wonderful set of mum friends, and we can go to each other's houses even when it's so untidy it looks like we've been burgled. Join in with whatever that night's plans for tea are, and let our kids play or fall asleep on the sofa while we hang out. It's great. The Shirley Hughes book is so lovely. Nobody in her illustrations has an immaculate house or sensory play bins. Her children accompany mums and dads on errands and cooking and gardening and on the school run. That's enough. I've gone back to a corporate job, and really, in what industry would you ask one person to work day and night shifts as CEO, CFO, COO, CTO, personal assistant, driver, head of logistics, head of learning and development, washerwoman, cleaner, and cook all in one? It's ridiculous. No wonder so many parents are miserable. They feel like a failure because we set impossible expectations. Which leads me back to the only tick list one should have at the end of the day. All fed, none dead, mostly in bed. My new standard is everyone warm and dry, clean bum, have we been outside, full tummies, making sure we eat some vegetables, not too much telly, focusing on kindness to each other. I find it so much easier to really feel my red lines and boundaries this way. It works for us. Lots of love, Molly.
Hello, Natalie. I cannot tell you how much more content I am now that I have ditched social media and trying to be perfect. I have a wonderful set of mum friends, and we can go to each other's houses even when it's so untidy it looks like we've been burgled. Join in with whatever that night's plans for tea are, and let our kids play or fall asleep on the sofa while we hang out. It's great. The Shirley Hughes book is so lovely. Nobody in her illustrations has an immaculate house or sensory play bins. Her children accompany mums and dads on errands and cooking and gardening and on the school run. That's enough. I've gone back to a corporate job. And really, in what industry would you ask one person to work day and night shifts as CEO, CFO, COO, CTO, personal assistant, driver, head of logistics, head of learning and development, washerwoman, cleaner and cook all in one? It's ridiculous. No wonder so many parents are miserable. They feel like a failure because we set impossible expectations. Which leads me back to the only tick list one should have, end of day. All fed, none dead, mostly in bed. My new standard is everyone warm and dry, clean bum, have we been outside, full tummies, making sure we eat some vegetables, not too much telly, focusing on kindness to each other. I find it so much easier to really feel my red lines and boundaries this way. It works for us. Lots of love.
Thanks, Justin. So in my body, as this gets read, as I read this, I kind of find myself letting go of a lot of things. And I am one of those people whose house pretty much continually looks like it's been burgled, with a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old literally ransacking place every 2 minutes. And those people that I can be with that can come and dangle around in the mess with me, it is a glorious thing to have friends that way, where you don't feel like you have to clear up, you don't feel like you have to make things perfect for anyone to come into your home. And this bit at the end, actually, Justin, is the thing that is so intriguing to me, that Molly says, I find it so much easier to really feel my red lines and boundaries in this way. And somehow this link between, I guess you could call it, accepting the imperfection of things and being with what is and what's real and what feels doable and brings ease, is not separate to knowing what we want to say yes to and what we want to say no to, and having the capacity to do that. There's somehow that in the kind of maelstrom of perfection and wanting everything to be the way it should be, and to eat the things you should be eating and do the things you should be doing with your children, and all of the kind of pressure of life, and by the way, this is about mothering and holding children and a family life, but I think this exists everywhere, that all the while we're searching for and striving for perfection, and we're busy trying to make things as they should be to some standard that got probably made up somewhere else, not even by us, it's really hard to know what's mine and what's not mine, what's my path and what's not my path, what I really want to create and what I really don't want to create. And I think that's what's so inviting to me, is that in the space where perfection isn't the goal, where me being able to do everything perfectly isn't the goal, I can actually have some agency in my life. Instead of being dragged around by the pursuit of perfection, I can create. And that's just feels like a very, very, very different existence. And to afford myself the grace and the space to actually think about what I'd like to create feels like, as I say, a really ordinary thing. But I can see how limited that becomes if I'm not spacious, if I'm not accepting, if I'm not filled with the warmth of what's happening in my life. It's impossible for me to be a creative person who's proactively building a life that's mine, rather than being dragged around by a load of standards that actually, when I look at it, don't actually belong to me at all.
So much to talk about here, Lizzie. I feel like you're laying out layer upon layer upon layer. There's the actual content of Molly's message about the very specific possibilities that come from parenting and mothering, and the kinds of standards that we set around it, and the kind of narratives we have specifically about that in our culture. And then, as you say, there's the whole situation that we're all in all the time, which is that whether you're a parent or not, which is that we live in a world in which we've been handed narratives about how life should be lived, which very often include standards that were made by others and then given to us. And we have to live in the tussle, it seems to me, between the very, very real and excellent place of standards that are made by a community of people. We say it's important too. And there are standards in Natalie's letter, sorry, in Molly's letter to Natalie. There are still standards, they're just different ones. All fed, none dead, mostly in bed, everyone warm and dry, all of that. But the real difficulty for us is that inevitably we get thrown into a life where we get given standards and expectations that have been made sometimes for good and sometimes for ill. And sometimes the ones that had really good intention in them have got distorted and have got way out of hand, so that things that really belong have been overinflated to impossible levels. And then we have to work out for ourselves what's ours in the middle of it. So we're always in that tension between the collective commitments of being a human. Thank goodness one of the ways I read this is I also go, thank goodness we're not doing this on our own. Thank goodness there were people who came before us who thought about stuff and who thought about what works and what's kind and what's loving and what's truthful and all of those kind of things. Because to have to work it out completely on our own would be a nightmare as well. So here we are, we're always torn between these two worlds of what we were given and who we want to be. And then, coming back to something that you've said, what makes it much, much more difficult is I think maybe in previous generations, there might have been a sense that the most important thing to do was to follow the traditions of those who came before. We've undone a lot of that, sometimes for good and sometimes for ill. But what we've been left with is very, very little to go on about how to decide what really matters and what doesn't. And into the midst of that comes this really poisonous dynamic about perfection, because perfection is always striving for some kind of imaginary world, that sort of exists there beyond the ordinary realms and the material. And somehow, if I'm the right kind of person, I'm going to be able to live in accordance with all of those standards and all of those expectations all at once. And then we pile into that comparison with other people, which social media makes so much more difficult. And then we pile into that inner criticism. And it's a poisonous mix when we live in the midst of that makes can seem so difficult to find a way out, apart from what most of us do, I think, in one way or another, is to pile on the harshness inside and to pile on the comparison with other people outside. And it's not at all surprising that in the midst of that we feel desperate, but we also feel separate from one another, because the comparison just creates distance between us rather than closeness and connection and reciprocity and mutuality and support. And I see it here. I mean, I see it in parenting, but I'm also thinking about people I'm speaking to who are in very different worlds, who are caught in the same dynamic. I think this perfection comparison, striving for some fictional place where it all works out, and if we're not there, then something is terrible with us, but apparently everybody else has it sorted. I think it's all over the place. And I think in a way, one of the difficulties is there's a way in which we come to value that struggle in and of itself. We say to ourselves, well, if I wasn't struggling with the standard, I wouldn't be a good person. If I let this drop, everything in life would fall apart. I'd be a person with no ethics and no, and I wouldn't care, and I wouldn't all of that. And that's where Molly's words come in so generously, is to say, there's almost certainly another way. And what I read in Molly's words is not just a gentleness to do with the standards. And she clearly hasn't given up standards, like caring about things. What I read is care coming from a different place, like care about what's actually necessary, but also care about not just about outcomes, but ways of being in the world. What is it to be kind, and what is it to be forgiving, and what is it to live in the inevitable, like to be real as well, that the world is messy. That is the seems to me is the heart of it, is that our perfectionist direction inevitably turns us into something really harsh. And then we have to ask ourselves the question, is that the kind of world we want to create for one another, for our children, for our colleagues?
Mm. As you're talking, Justin, I really struck by this word strive and what impact that has on me as I hear it. And the kind of matching up I'm making in my system is like, all the while I'm striving, I'm missing so much. There's something about this striving that takes me and maybe others away from, like you're saying, paying attention to ways of being, paying attention to what's really needed. And the word that was arising for me, Justin, was warmth. You know, when I'm striving, how warm am I? How warm am I being? How accepting am I being? How well am I creating an atmosphere for other people to thrive in around me, whether, you know, wherever I am? This feeling of striving, which I think also gets fueled by comparison and fueled by looking at other people's lives and fueled by envy and competition and all of those things. And as I strive and strive and strive, swathes of life get missed out. And we're returning to this thing that I say often about receiving our lives. And if I'm just striving and striving, what am I striving really for the sake of? What am I striving? Am I just going to strive, 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 die? And in which case, what was that about? When did I get to have a human life and receive the gifts of it as was intended by me being born? And if all I do is strive and then that's it, what on earth was I up to in the first place? So I think it's also like a, just even the kind of luxury of thinking about something properly. And I think that's partly what turning towards life is really serving for me, is a chance to actually reflect from a very kind of grounded place rather than just be caught up in the things that are expected and the things that we should be doing, and sit here and wonder, really ask myself the question of, well, if I'm really striving, what am I striving for? And why am I striving for that thing? And is that thing really what I should be striving for? And if I'm just striving all the time, why, you know, what's that about? And in the realm of parenting, it's like, am I striving for my children to become grown up and them to be fine or something? But then if that's what I'm striving for, I wonder what I miss now. What do I miss about who they are right now as fully fledged human beings now, if I'm only working in service of who they are in 20 years' time or something? And likewise with anything, if I'm building a project, if I'm nurturing an organization, if I'm leading something, what am I missing by not being attuned to the present moment of happening, as well as holding whatever that strivingness is? But if I'm only striving, if I'm only aiming for something that's kind of way down the line, what am I missing? And for me, it's like mostly everything, because that can take up all of the energy in the world, just like getting there, going there, and then I miss the whole deal.
I'm thinking, one of the things I've been thinking about whilst you've been talking, Lizzie, is about the stories we have about what it is to be a person, and where the different stories that we have lead us. And I've been particularly thinking about, we've had a bit of his work before, and maybe it will come in again on Turning Towards Life. I've been following Ian McGilchrist's work for a long time, and he talks about, essentially the reason I want to bring his name in is he talks about a sort of receptive way of being in the world that's so important to being human, which is what you're talking about here, and a sort of mechanistic controlling way of being in the world that we also have. And both are necessary, but the one that is actually a life lived is the receptive one. Receptive, connected, reciprocal, participative, in the midst of things. And the mechanistic controlling one, controlling the world one, is one that we can bring out when we really need it. It's an incredible human capacity to be able to analyze and plan and understand and all of that. I was thinking whilst you were talking that And I've also been thinking, sort of as a parallel stream, about what it is to live in a world, any of us who are alive now, the world of steam engines came a long time ago, and then we had internal combustion engines, and then we had digital things like computers, and now we live in the world of all of those machines. And we can so easily start to think of our lives as, and be handed the story that our lives are intended to be a story about efficiency. Like we are machines making good machines who will then make good machines. If you think about having children, like my job is to make sure that they get to live an efficient life in somehow. So I'm doing all these things so that they will get to be an efficient life. And if we live from the mechanistic efficiency, productiveness, control narrative only. In fact, if that's the one that dominates, what we miss out on is the ability to live more like forests do, or like rivers do, or like the earth does, or like schools of fish do, or like humans do, actually. We take away from ourselves the warm, wet, connected, biological, relational. All of that we so easily forget. And you can see it here, right here in Molly and Natalie's exchange about parenting. And I can hear it in what you're talking about. The one way of talking about it is receiving our lives is the work of remembering that we are alive, that we're not machines, that we're not here just to grind out every drop of productivity out of ourselves and out of our children. And in a way, I'm grateful for Molly for writing, for bringing the worlds of the corporate world and the parenting world together. Because in a way, what she's also pointing out to us is that the narratives of efficiency and effectiveness that are in the corporate world that are very often about, they may be in a very well-intentioned way about profit and productivity, but they may also be in a sort of poisonous way about grinding and squeezing life out of everything in for the sake of the thing that the organization does, that we can very easily import those into our homes. And then that raises the question for me is whether you're a parent or a partner, a sibling or a friend, a member of a community, a person who walks in the forests, a person who works in various ways, what stories do we want to live in about ourselves? And that's the move that Molly's making, which is to say, this story and this story that is also fed by comparison, because that's how all these stories get fed, as we look at other people and we go, they're living that story, apparently I need to live that story. This story doesn't work. And I think it's not just that the story doesn't work for me, although that's part of it, like there's a sort of individualist part of this, like what I get to choose, but also starting to see that this story doesn't really work to be a human. It doesn't work to be a mum this way. It doesn't work to be a dad this way. It doesn't. And starting to be brave enough to go, if I didn't live that story, what else would I live? And that requires us to do this thing that Molly's doing that's so important, which is to be a person who pays attention, who notices the narratives in which we live and all of the practices and ways of being in the world that come from it. Can get enough of ourselves outside it to say, does that produce life? Is it life-giving to live that this way? Or is something else called for? Which I know is something that you're such an advocate for too, Lizzie. That's sort of to me is the grand question that Molly's asking us.
And as I think about it, there's a weird thing that happened. You said we kind of inherited some things and other things got left behind. Somehow, there's something to do with mothering where, because of the efficiency narrative and us all kind of becoming pressurized, so you should know what to do. I don't know one mother yet who I've met that has said when they sent us home from hospital or when we were left for the first time with our new baby, we had no idea what to do. Everyone says the same thing. And so there's some way that this whole culture of efficiency, of everybody living in separate houses, doing their own thing, making their own lives or whatever, has kind of cut us off. The efficiency has cut us off from any of that inherited wisdom. And so we're kind of scrambling about in the dark, going on social media or trying to find somebody, in the street to ask. Or we probably don't do that at all, which is part of the suffering that kind of happens on the inside of a home, is that we're not in it together. We're not doing this thing that Molly's suggesting. We're not comparing notes and dangling around in each other's mess and letting each other off the hook and showing each other ways to live that are life-giving, as you say. We're kind of behind closed doors, struggling away, trying to keep up with appearances and make sure that we're all doing the right thing. And in a way, in organizational life, so much more is transparent. So much more is transparent. You can be in a kind of corporate setting, an earwig, and learn and watch and see. And there's lineage in it. There's people who manage people, and you can look up to people, and you can. And of course, there's all kinds of unhealthy power situations going on, but we're learning from each other, whether we're learning good things or bad things or whatever. We're learning from each other in a office or in a place where everybody's working towards something. But the way that we're arranged and the way that we live means that many people have never even held a baby when they've hold their baby for the first time, let alone know how to mother them. It's just like just being with a baby is alien something, because the world is set up in all of these ways. So I'm really quite flummoxed in a way. How has it got this way that we have forgotten to learn from one another, and we've let so much go and picked up so much, and it doesn't feel like a very helpful direction for those of us who are doing the most, in my view, important foundational work in the world, which is to nurture children. So I'm just grateful that this is the conversation, and also grateful, Justin, because I know that there's a little flurry of new and older mothers listening to Turning Towards Life at the moment, and I want to be in support of and an advocate for all of us who are doing this and who are subject to all of the world's narratives, all of the world's huge, big, fat narratives about what it is to be a human being and how that infiltrates itself, all of that into mothering. So thank you, Justin, for being open to the conversation and being an advocate for the importance of nurturing and being in the thick of life with children and making a family and making a house and feeling like we're also still valid humans who are participating in the world.
Thank you, Lizzie. I'm actually looking at the time and thinking that we might have to end, which I know is your job this week, but I know that my door is going to open any minute and I'm going to have to end. So, how about we end here for today? And just to say thank you to you and thank you to me and thank you to everyone for this extraordinary conversation we get to be in. And thank you to Molly and Natalie for writing in the way that they have done. It's really wonderful to get to do this together, and we will, all being well, be back again same time next week.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks, everyone.